good-looking man, with gray hair and keen blue eyes. He smiled at me.
"You're Matt Saber. I was expecting you."
That made me grin. With a face like this, you should expect me. I took a licking for a while.
"And gave one to Morgan Park. I've just come from the jail where I looked him over. He has 3 broken ribs and his jaw is broken."
"No." I stared at him. He nodded.
"The ribs were broken last night sometime, I'd guess."
There was no quit in him. West nodded seriously.
"There still isn't. He's a dangerous man, Saber. A very dangerous man."
That I knew. Looking around, I saw nothing of Olga McLaren. Hesitating to ask, I waited and let him work on me. When he was finished, I got to my feet and buckled on my guns.
"And now?"
he asked. "Back to the 2-bar. There's work to do there." He nodded but seemed to be hesitating about something. Then he asked,
"What about the murder of Rudd McLaren? What's your view on that?"
Something occurred to me then that I had forgotten. "It was Morgan Park," I said. "Conneval found the footprint of a man nearby. The boots were very small. Morgan Park, and I noticed it for the first time during our fight, has very small feet, despite his size."
"You may be right," he agreed hesitantly. "I've wondered."
"Who else could it have been? I know I didn't do it."
"I don't believe you did, but..."
He hesitated, then dropped the subject. Slowly I walked out to the porch and stopped there, fitting my hat on my head. It had to be done gently, for I had 2 good-sized lumps just at my hairline. A movement made me turn, and Olga was standing in the doorway. Her dark hair was piled on her head, the first time I had seen it that way, and she was wearing something green and summery that made her eyes an even deeper green. For a long moment, neither of us spoke, and then she said,
"Your face, does it hurt very much?"
"Not much. It mostly just looks bad, and I'll probably not be able to shave for a while. How's Carnival?"
"He's much better. I've put Fox to running the ranch."
"He's a good man." I twisted my hat in my hands. "When are you going back?"
"Tomorrow, I believe."
How lovely she was. At this moment I knew that I had never in all my life seen anything so lovely, or anyone so desirable, or anyone who meant so much to me. It was strange, all of it. But how did she feel toward me?
"You're staying on the 2-bar?
"Yes, my house is coming along now, and the cattle are doing well. I've started something there, and I think I'll stay. This," I said quietly, "is my home. This is my country. This is where I belong." She looked up, and as our eyes met, I thought she was going to speak, but she said nothing. Then I stepped quickly to her and took her hands. "Olga, you can't really believe that I killed your father. You can't believe I ever would do such a thing."
"No, I never really believed you'd killed him."
"Then," she said nothing, not meeting my eyes. "I want you, Olga. You, more than anything. I want you on the 2-bar. You're the reason I've stayed here, and you are the reason I'm going to remain."
Don't talk like that. We can never be anything to each other."
"What are you saying? You can't mean that."
"I do mean it. You're violent. You're a killer. You've killed men here, and I think you live for fighting. I watched you in that fight with Morgan. You actually enjoyed it."
Thinking that over, I had to agree. In a way, yes. After all, fighting has been a necessity too long in the life of men upon Earth. It's not an easy thing to be rid of. Mentally, I know that violence is always a bad means to an end. I know that all disputes should be settled without it. Nevertheless, deep inside me, there is something that does like it. It is too old a feeling to die out quickly, and as long as there are men in the world like Morgan Park, the Penders, and Bodie Miller, there must be men willing and able to fight them.
But why does it have to be you? She looked up at me quickly. Don't fight any more, Matt. Stay on the two bar for a while. Don't come to town. I don't want you to meet Bodie Miller. You mustn't. You mustn't.
Shrugging, I drew back a little. Honey, there's some things a man must do, some things he has to do. If meeting Bodie Miller is one of them, I'll do it. Meeting a man who challenges you may seem very foolish to a woman's world, but a man cannot live only among women. He must live with men, and that means he must be judged by their standards. And if I back down for Miller, then I'm through here.
You can go away. You could go to California. You could go and straighten out some business for me there. Matt, you could...
No, I'm staying here. There were more words and hard words, but when I left her, I had not changed. Not that I underestimated Miller in any way. I had seen such men before. Billy the Kid had been like him. Bodie Miller was full of salt now. He was riding his luck with spurs. Remembering that sallow face with its hard, cruel eyes, I knew I could not live in the country around Hatton's Point without facing Miller. Yet I saw nothing of Bodie Miller in Hatton's Point, and took the trail for the two bar, riding with caution. The chances were he was confident enough now to face me, especially after the smashing I'd taken. Moreover, the Slades were in the country, and would be smarting over the beating I had given them. The two bar looked better than anything I had seen in a long time. It was shadowed now with late evening, but the slow smoke lifted straight above the chimney, and I could see the horses in the corral. As I rode into the yard, a man materialized from the shadows. It was Jonathan Benares, with his long rifle. When I swung down from the saddle, he stared at my face, but said nothing. Knowing he would be curious, I explained simply. Morgan Park and I headed out. It was quite a fight. He took a licking.
If he looks worse than you, he must be a sight.
He does, believe me. Anybody been around?
Nary a soul. Jolly was down in the wash this afternoon. Them cows are sure fattening up fast. You got you a mighty fine ranch here. Pa was over. He said if you needed another hand, you could have Zeb for the asking.
Thanks. Your father's all man. Jonathan nodded.
I reckon. We aim to be neighbors to folks who'll neighbor with us. We won't have no truck with them as walks it high and mighty. Pa took to you right off. Said you come and faced him like a man and laid your cards on the table.
Mulvaney grinned when I walked through the door and then indicated the food on the table.
Sit up. You're just in time.
It was good. Sitting there in my own home, seeing the light reflecting from the dishes and feeling the warmth and pleasantness of it. But the girl I wanted to share these things with was not here to make it something more than just a house.
You're silent tonight, Mulvaney said shrewdly. Is it the girl, or is it the fight?
I grinned, and my face hurt with the grinning. I was thinking of the girl, but not of Park.
I was wondering about the fight, Mulvaney said. I wish I'd been there to see it.
I told them about it, and as I talked, I began to wonder what Park would do now, for he would not rest easy in jail, and there was no telling what trick Jake Booker might be up to. And what was it they wanted? Until I knew that, I knew nothing. The place to look was where the bar M and the two bar joined, and tomorrow I would do my looking, and would do it carefully. On this ride, Mulvaney joined me, and I welcomed the company as well as the Irishman's shrewd brain. We rode east toward the vast wilderness that lay there, east toward the country where I had followed Morgan Park toward his rendezvous with Jack Slade, east toward the maze of canyons, desert, and lonely lands beyond the river.
"See any tracks up that way before?"
Mulvaney asked suddenly. "Some," I admitted, "but I was following the fresh trail. We'll have a look around."
"Think it will be that silver you found out about in Booker's office?"
"Could be. We'll head for Dark Canyon Plateau and work north from there. I think that's the country."
"I'd feel better," Mulvaney admitted after a pause, "if we knew what had become of that Slade outfit. They'll be feeling none too kindly after the whipping you gave them."
I agreed. Studying the narrowing point, I knew we would soon strike a trail that led back to the northwest, a trail that would take us into the depths of Fabled Canyon. Nearing that trail, I suddenly saw something that looked like a horse track. A bit later, we found the trail of a single horse, freshly shod and heading northeast. A trail no more than a few hours old.
"Could be one of the Slade outfit," Mulvaney speculated dubiously. "Park's in jail, and nobody else would come over here."
We fell in behind, and I could see these tracks must have been made during the night. At one place a hoof had slipped, and the earth had not yet dried out. Obviously, then, the horse had passed after the sun went down. We rode with increasing care, and we were gaining. When the canyon branched, we found a water hole where the rider had filled his canteen and prepared a meal. He's no woodsman, Mulvaney. Much of the wood he used was not good burning wood, and some of it green. Also, his fire was in a place where the slightest breeze would swirl smoke in his face.
"He didn't unsaddle," Mulvaney said, "which means he was in a hurry."
This was not one of Slade's outlaws, for always on the dodge, nobody knew better than they how to live in the wilds. Furthermore, they knew these canyons. This might be a stranger drifting into the country looking for a hideout. But it was somewhere in this maze that we would find what it was that drew the interest of Morgan Park. Scouting around, I suddenly looked up.
"Mulvaney, he's whipped us. There's no trail out." "Sure, and didn't he take wings to get out of here?" Mulvaney growled. "We've gone blind. That's what we've done."
Returning to the spring, we let the horses drink while I did some serious thinking. The rock walls offered no route of escape. The trail had been plain to this point, and then vanished. No tracks. He had watered his horse, prepared a meal, and afterward left no tracks.
"It's uncanny," I said. "It looks like we've a ghost on our hands."
Mulvaney rubbed his grizzled jaw and chuckled.
"Who would be better to cope with a ghost than a couple of Irishmen?"
"Make some coffee, you bog trotter," I told him. "Maybe then we'll think better." "It's a cinch he didn't fly," I said later over coffee. "And not even a snake could get up these cliffs. So he rode in, and if he left, he rode out."
"But he left no tracks, Matt. He could have brushed them out, but we saw no signs of brushing. Where does that leave us?"
"Maybe," the idea came suddenly. "He tied something on his feet. Let's look up the canyons. He must be careful right here, but if he's wearing something on his feet, the farther he goes, the more tired he'll be. Or his horse will be. You take one canyon and I'll take the other. We'll meet back here in an hour." Walking, leading my buckskin, I scanned the ground. At no place was the sand hard-packed, and there were tracks of deer, lion, and an occasional bighorn. Then I found a place where wild horses had fed, and there something attracted me. Those horses had been frightened. From quiet feeding, they had taken off suddenly, and no bear or lion would frighten them so. They would leave, but not so swiftly. Only one thing could make mild horses fly so quickly. Man. The tracks were comparatively fresh, and instinct told me this was the right way. The wild horses had continued to run. Where their tracks covered the bottom of the canyon and where the unknown rider must follow them, I should find a clue. And I did, almost at once. Something foreign to the rock in Manzanita caught my eye. Picking it free of a manzanita branch, I straightened up. It was sheep's wool. Swearing softly, I swung into the saddle and turned back. The rider had brought sheepskins with him, tied some over his horse's hoofs, and some over his own boots, and so left no defined tracks. Mulvaney was waiting for me. "Find anything?" He listened with interest and then nodded. It was a good idea he had. "Well, we'll get him now." The trail led northeast and finally to a high windswept plateau, unbroken by anything but a few towering rocks or low-growing sagebrush. We sat our horses squinting against the distance, looking over the plateau and then out over the vast maze of canyons, a red corrugated distance of land, almost untrod by men. "If he's out there," Mulvaney said, "we may never find him. You could lose an army in that." "We'll find him. My hunch is that it won't be far." I nodded at the distance. He had no pack horse, only a canteen to carry water. And even if he's uncommonly shrewd, he's not experienced in the wilds. Mulvaney had been studying the country.
"I prospected through here, boy."
He indicated a line of low hills to the east.
"Those are the Sweet Alice Hills. There are ruins ahead of us, and away yonder is Beef Basin."
"We'll go slow. My guess is we're not far behind him." As if in acknowledgment of my comment, a rifle shot rang out sharply in the clear air. We heard no bullet, but only the shot, and then another, closer, sharper.
"He's not shooting at us," Mulvaney said, staring with shielded eyes. "Where is he?"
"Let's move," I called. "I don't like this spot." Recklessly, we plunged down the steep trail into the canyon. Down, down, down. Racing around elbow turns of the switchback trail, eager only to get off the skyline and into shelter. If the unknown rider had not fired at us, whom had he fired at? Who was the rider? Why was he shooting? Chapter 11. Tired as my buckskin was, he seemed to grasp the need for getting under cover, and he rounded curves in that trail that made my hair stand on end. At the bottom we drew up in a thick cluster of trees and brush, listening. Even our horses felt the tension, for their ears were up, their eyes alert. All was still. Some distance away a stone rattled. Sweat trickled behind my ear, and I smelled the hot aroma of dust and baked leaves. My palms grew sweaty, and I dried them, but there was no sound. Careful to let my saddle creak as little as possible, I swung down, Winchester in hand. With a motion to wait, I moved away. From the edge of the trees, I could see no more than 30 yards in one direction, and no more than 20 in the other. Rock walls towered above, and the canyon lay hot and still under the midday sun. From somewhere came the sound of trickling water, but there was no other sound or movement. My neck felt hot and sticky. My shirt clung to my shoulders. Shifting the rifle in my hands, I studied the rock walls with misgiving. Drying my hands on my jeans, I took a chance and moved out of my cover, moving to a narrow 6-inch band of shade against the far wall. Easing myself to the bend of the rock, I peered around. 60 yards away stood a saddled horse, head hanging. My eyes searched and saw nothing, and then, just visible beyond a white, water-worn boulder, I saw a boot and part of a leg. Cautiously I advanced, wary for any trick, ready to shoot instantly. There was no sound but an occasional chuckle of water over rocks. Then suddenly I could see the dead man. His skull was bloody, and he'd been shot over the eye with a rifle, and at a fairly close range. He'd probably never known what hit him. There was vague familiarity to him, and his skull bore a swelling. This had been one of Slade's men, who I'd slugged on the trail to Hatton's Point. The bullet had struck over the eye and ranged downward, which meant he had been shot from ambush, from a hiding place high on a canyon wall. Lining up the position, I located a tuft of green that might be a ledge. Mulvaney was approaching me.
"He wasn't the man we followed," he advised. "This one was coming from the other way."
"He's one of the Slade crowd. Dry gulched."
"Whoever he is," Mulvaney assured me, "we can't take chances. The fellow who killed this man shot for keeps."
We started on, but no longer were the tracks disguised. The man we followed was going more slowly now. Suddenly I spotted a boot print.
"Mulvaney," I whispered hoarsely, "that's the track of the man who killed Rudd McLaren." "But Morgan Park is in the Hooskow," Mulvaney protested.
"Unless he's broken out. But I'd swear that was the track found near McLaren's body. The one Cannibal found." My buckskin's head came up and his nostrils dilated. Grabbing his nose, I stifled the neigh, then stared up the canyon. Less than 100 yards away, a dun horse was picketed near a patch of bunch grass. Hiding our horses in a box canyon, we scaled the wall for a look around. From the top of the badly fractured mesa, we could see all the surrounding country. Under the southern edge of the mesa was a cluster of ancient ruins. Beyond them, some deep canyons. With my glasses shielded from sun reflection by my hat, I watched a man emerge from a crack in the earth, carrying a heavy sack. Placing it on the ground, he removed his coat, and with a pick and bar began working at a slab of rock.
"What's he doing?"
Mulvaney demanded, squinting his eyes. "Prying a slab of rock," I told him. And even as I spoke, the rock slid, rumbled with other debris, then settled in front of the crack. After a careful inspection, the man concealed his tools, picked up his sack and rifle, and started back. Studying him, I could see he wore black jeans, very dusty now, and a small hat. His face was not visible. He bore no resemblance to anyone I had seen before. He disappeared near the base of the mountain, and for a long time we heard nothing. "He's gone," I said.
"We'd best be mighty careful,"
Mulvaney warned uneasily.
"That's no man to be fooling with, I'm thinking." A shot shattered the clear white radiance of the afternoon. One shot, and then another.
We stared at each other, amazed and puzzled. There was no other sound, no further shots. Then uneasily we began our descent of the mesa, sitting ducks if he was waiting for us. To the south and west the land shimmered with heat, looking like a vast and unbelievable city, long fallen to ruin. We slid into the canyon where we'd left the horses, and then the shots were explained. Both horses were on the ground, sprawled in pools of their own blood. Our canteens had been emptied and smashed with stones. We were 30 miles from the nearest ranch, and the way led through some of the most rugged country on earth.
"There's water in the canyons," Mulvaney said at last, "but no way to carry it. You think he knew who we were?"
"If he lives in this country, he knows that buckskin of mine," I said bitterly. "He was the best horse I ever owned." To have hunted for us and found us, the unknown man would have had to take a chance on being killed himself. But by this means he left a small hope of getting out alive. "We'll have a look where he worked," I said. "No use leaving without knowing about that." It took us all of an hour to get there, and night was near before we had dug enough behind the slab of rock to get at the secret. Mulvaney cut into the bank with his pick, ripping out a chunk and grabbing it. He thrust it under my eyes, his own glowing with enthusiasm.
"Silver," he said hoarsely. "Look at it. If the vein is like that for any distance, this is the biggest strike I ever saw. Richer than Silver Reef."
The ore glittered in his hand. There was what had killed Rudd McLaren and all the others. "It's rich," I said, "but I'd settle for the 2-bar. Mulvaney agreed.
"But still," he said, "the silver is a handsome sight."
"Pocket it then," I said dryly, "for it's a long walk we have."
"But a walk we can do," he grinned at me. "Shall we start now?"
"Tonight," I said, "when the walking will be cool." We let the shadows grow long around us while we walked and watched the thick blackness choke the canyons and deepen in the shadows of trees. We walked on steadily with little talk, up ruined canyon and over a saddle of the Sweet Alice Hills, and down to the spring on the far side of the hills. There we rested, and we drank several times. From the stars I could see that it had taken us better than 2 hours of walking to make less than 5 miles. But now the trail would be easier along Dark Canyon Plateau, and then I remembered Slade's camp. What if they were back there again, holed up in the same place? It was a thought, and to go down the canyon toward them was actually none out of the way. Although the walking might be rougher at times, we would have the stream beside us, a thing to be considered. Mulvaney agreed, and we descended into the canyon. Dark it was there, and quiet except for the rustle of water over stones, and there was a cool dampness that was good to our throats and skins after the heat. We walked on, taking our time, for we'd no records to break. And then we heard singing before we saw the reflection of the fire. We walked on, moving more carefully, for the canyon walls caught and magnified every sound. 3 men were about the fire, and one of them was Jack Slade. 2 were talking while 1 man sang as he cleaned his rifle. We reached the edge of the firelight before they saw us, and I had my Winchester on them. In Mulvaney, that cannon-like 4-shot pistol of his.
"Grab the sky, Slade!"
I barked the order at him, and his hand dropped and froze.
"Who is it?"
he demanded hoarsely, straining his eyes at us. Our faces being shielded by the brims of our hats, he could not see enough of them. I stepped nearer so the firelight reached under my hat brim.
"It's Matt Saber," I said. "And I'm not wanting to kill you or anybody. We want 2 horses. You can lend them to us, or we'll take them. Our horses were shot by the same man that killed your partner."
Slade jerked, his eyes showing incredulity.
"Killed? Lot killed?"
"That's right. Intentionally or otherwise, he met up with the hombre we were following. He drilled your man right over the eyes. We followed on, and he found where we left our horses and shot them both to leave us afoot."
"Damn a man that'll kill a horse," Slade said. "Who was he?"
"Don't know," I admitted. "Only he leaves a track like Morgan Park. At least he's got a small foot."
"But Park's in jail," Mulvaney added. "Not now he isn't," Slade said. "Morgan Park broke jail within an hour after darkness last night. He pulled one of those iron bars right out of that old wall, stole a horse and got away. He's on the loose and after somebody's scalp."
Park free. But the man we had followed had not been as big as Park was. I did not tell him that. "How about the horses?" I asked.
"You can have 'em, Saber," Slade said grudgingly. "I'm clearing out. I've no stomach for this sort of thing."
"Are they spares?" Slade nodded.
"We've a 6 extras. In our business, it pays to keep fresh horses." He grinned. "No hard feelings, Saber?"
"Not me," I said. "Only don't you boys get any wild ideas about jumping me. My trigger finger is right jittery. Slade shrugged wryly.
With two guns on us? Not likely.
I don't know whether your partner can shoot or not, but with a cannon that big, he doesn't need to.
What kind of gun is that, anyway?
She's my own make, Mulvaney said cheerfully.
But the slug kills just as dead.
Give this hombre an old stovepipe and he'll make a cannon, I told him. He's a genius with tools. While Mulvaney got the horses, I stood over the camp. Any other news in town? I asked Slade.
Plenty, he admitted. Some army officer came into town claiming Park killed his brother. Seems a right salty gent.
And, his eyes flickered to mine,
Bodie Miller is talking it big around town. He says you're his meat.
He's a heavy eater, that boy, I said carelessly. He may tackle something one of these days that'll give him indigestion. Jack Slade shrugged and watched Mulvaney lead up the horses. As we mounted, I glanced back at him. We'll leave these horses at the corral of the livery stable in town, if you like. Slade's eyes twinkled a little.
Better not. First time you get a chance, take 'em to a corral you'll find in the woods back of Armstrong's. Towns don't set well with me, nor me with them.
The horses were fresh and ready to go, and we let them run. Daylight found us riding up the street of Hatton's Point, a town that was silent and waiting. The loft was full of hay, and both of us headed for it. 2 hours later, I was wide awake. Splashing water on my face, I headed for O'Hara's. The first person I saw as we came through the door was Keith Chapin. Olga McLaren was with him. Chapin looked up as we entered.
"Sorry, Saber," he said. "I've just heard."
"Heard what?" I was puzzled.
"That you're losing the two-bar."
"Are you crazy? What are you talking about?"
"You mean you haven't heard? Jake Booker showed up the other day and filed a deed to the two-bar. He purchased the rights to it from Ball's nephew, the legitimate heir. He also has laid claim to the Bar M, maintaining that it was never actually owned by Rudd McLaren, but belonged to his brother-in-law, now dead. Booker has found some relative of the brother-in-law's and bought his right to the property."
"Well, of all, That's too flimsy, Chapin. He can't hope to get away with that. What's on his mind?" Chapin shrugged.
"If he goes to court, he can make it tough.
You have witnesses to the fact that Ball gave you the ranch, but whether that will stand in court, I don't know. Especially with a shrewd operator like Booker fighting it. As to McLaren, it turns out he did leave the ranch to his brother-in-law during a time some years ago when he was suffering from a gunshot wound and apparently never made another will. What's important right now is that Jake is going to court to get both you and Olga off the ranches, and he plans to freeze all sales, bank accounts, and other money or stock until a case is settled. In other words, he doesn't want us to have the money to fight him." Chapin shrugged.
"I don't know what his idea is, but I'll tell you one thing. He stands in well with the judge, who's just about as crooked as he is, and they'll use your reputation against you. Don't think Booker hasn't considered all the angles, and don't think he doesn't know how flimsy his case may be. He'll bolster it every way possible, and he knows every trick in the book."
I sat down. This had come so suddenly that it took the wind out of my sails. "Has this news gone to the Bar M yet? Has it got out to Carnival?" Chapin shrugged.
"Why should it? He was only the foreman. Olga has been told, and you can imagine how she feels."
My eyes went to hers, and she looked away. Katie O'Hara came in, and I gave her my order for breakfast and tried the coffee she had brought with her. It tasted good. Sitting there, my mind began to work swiftly. There was still a chance, if I figured things right. Jake Booker was no fool. He had not paid out money for those claims unless he believed he could make them stand in court. He knew about how much money I had and knew that Olga McLaren with the ranch bank accounts frozen, would be broke. Neither of us could afford to hire an attorney, and so far as that went, there was no attorney within miles able to cope with Booker. What had started as a range war had degenerated into a range steal by a shyster lawyer, and he had arguments that could not be answered with a gun. "How was Cannavale when you left?"
"Better," Olga said, still refusing to meet my eyes.
"What about Morgan Park? I heard he escaped."
"Tharp's out after him now. That Colonel Darcy went with him in the posse. There had been a horse left for Park. Who was responsible for that, we don't know. But it may have been one of his own men."
"Where did Tharp go?"
"Toward the ranch, I think. There was no trail they could find."
"They should have gone east toward Dark Canyon. That's where he'll be."
Chapin looked at me curiously, intently.
"Why there?" "That's where he'll go," I replied definitely. "Take my word for it." They talked a little between them, but I ate in silence, always conscious of the girl across the table, aware of her every move. Finishing my meal, I got up and reached for my hat. Olga looked up quickly.
"Don't go out there. Bodie Miller is in town."
"Thanks." Our eyes met and held. Were they saying something to me, or was I reading into their depths the meaning I wanted them to hold? "Thanks," I repeated. "I'd prefer not to meet him now. This is no time for personal grudges." It was a horse I wanted, a better horse than the one borrowed from Slade and which might have been stolen. This, I reflected dryly, would be a poor time to be hung as a horse thief. There was no gate at the corral on this side, so I climbed over, crossing the corral. At the corner, I stopped in my tracks. A horse was tied to the corral. A horse stripped but recently of a saddle. A dun horse that showed evidence of hard riding. And in the damp earth, near the trough, was a boot print. Kneeling, I examined the hocks of the tied horse. From one of them I picked a shred of wool, then another. Spinning around, I raced for the restaurant.
"Katie," I demanded, "who owns that horse? Did you see the rider?"
"If you're thinking of Park, that horse couldn't carry him far, and he would not stay in the town, not him."
"Did you see anyone else?"
"Nobody. Wait a minute. I did so. 'Twas Jake Booker. Not that I saw him with the horse, but a bit before daylight he came around the corner from that way and asked if I'd coffee ready."
Booker. He had small feet. He was in with Park. He wanted McLaren dead. He had killed Slade's man and shot our horses. Booker had some explaining to do. Mulvaney was crawling from the loft where I'd slept, but was all attention at once. He listened, then ran to the stable office. Waiting only until he was on a horse and racing from town, I started back to O'Hara's. My mind was made up. The time had come for a showdown, and this time we would all be in it, and Jake Booker would not be forgotten. Key Chapin looked up when I came in.
"Key,"
I said quickly, "this is the payoff.
Find out for me where Booker is. Get somebody to keep an eye on him. He's not to leave town if he tries. Keep him under observation all the time until Mulvaney gets back from the ranch."
Turning to Olga, I asked her, "How about Cannavale? Can he ride yet? Can he stand a buckboard trip?" She hesitated.
"He couldn't ride, but he might stand it in the buckboard."
"Then get him into town and have the boys come with him. Fox especially. I like that man Fox, and Cannavale may need protection. Bring him in and bring him here."
"What is it? What have you learned?"
Chapin demanded. "About everything I need to know," I replied. "We're going to save the Bar M for Olga, and perhaps we'll save my ranch too. In any event, we'll have the man who killed Rudd McLaren."
"What?" Olga's face was pale. "Matt, do you mean that?"
"I do. I only hope that Tharp gets back with Morgan Park. But I doubt if we'll see him again. Turning to Key, who was at the door. Another thing. We might as well settle it all. Send a writer to the CP and have Jim Pinder in here. Get him here fast. We'll have our showdown the first thing in the morning. Twice I walked up the street and back. Nowhere was there any sign of Bodie Miller, or of Red, his riding partner. The town still had that sense of expectancy that I had noticed upon coming into town. And they were right, for a lot of things were going to happen, and happen fast. Key met me in the saloon. He walked toward me quickly, his face alive with interest.
What have you got in mind, Matt? What are you planning?
Several things. In the first place, there's been enough fighting and trouble. We're going to end it right here. We're going to close up this whole range fight. There aren't going to be any halfway measures. How well do you know Tharp?
Very well. Why?
Will he throw his weight with us? It would mean a lot if he would.
You can bank on him. He's a solid man, Matt. Very solid.
All right. In the morning, then. In the morning, we'll settle everything. There was a slight movement at the door, and I looked up.
My pulse almost stopped with the shock of it. Bodie Miller stood there, his hands on his hips, his lips smiling.
Why, sure, he said, if that's what you want. The morning is as good a time as any.
Chapter 12. The sun came up clear and hot. Already at daybreak, the sky was without a cloud, and the distant mountains seemed to shimmer in a haze of their own making. The desert lost itself in heat waves before the day had scarce begun, and there was a stillness lying upon both desert and town, a sort of poised awareness without sound. When I emerged upon the street, I was alone, like a town of ghosts. The street was empty, silent except for the echo of my steps on the boardwalk. Then, as if their sound had broken the spell, the saloon door opened and the bartender emerged and began to sweep off the walk. He glanced quickly around at me, bobbed his head, and then with an uneasy look around, finished his sweeping hurriedly and ducked back inside. A man carrying two wooden buckets emerged from an alley and looked cautiously about. Assured there was no one in sight, he started across the street, glancing apprehensively, first in one direction, then the other. Sitting down in one of the polished chairs before the saloon, I tipped back my hat and stared at the mountains. In a few minutes, or a few hours, I might be dead. It was not a good morning on which to die, but what morning is? Yet in a few minutes or hours, another man and myself would probably meet out there in that street, and we would exchange shots, and one or both of us would die. A rider came into the street, Mulvaney. He left his horse at the stable and clumped over to me. He was carrying enough guns to fight a war.
"Come in," Mulvaney said. "The whole kit and caboodle of 'em. Be here within the hour. Jolly's already in town. Jonathan went after the others."
Nodding, I watched a woman looking down the street from the second floor. Suddenly she turned and left the window as if she had seen something or been called.
"Eat yet?"
"Not yet."
"Seen Olga or Chapin?"
"No."
"If Red cuts into this scrap," Mulvaney said, "he's mine."
"You can have him." A door slammed somewhere, and then the man with the two wooden buckets hurried fearfully across the street, slopping water at every step. "All right," I said. "We'll go eat." There was no sign of Bodie Miller or of Jim Pinder. Sheriff Tharp was still out hunting Morgan Park. Unless he got back soon, I'd have to run my show alone. Mother O'Hara had a white tablecloth over the oilcloth, and her best dishes were out. She brought me coffee and said severely,
"You should be ashamed. That girl laid awake half the night thinking of nothing but you."
"About me?" I was incredulous.
"Yes, about you. Worried fair 6 years. About you and that Bodie Miller."
The door opened and Olga walked in. Her eyes were very green today, and her hair drawn back to a loose knot at the back of her neck, but curled slightly into two waves on her forehead. She avoided my glance, and it was well she did, or I'd have come right out of my chair. Then men entered the restaurant. Chapin looking unusually severe, Colonel Darcy, and last of all, Jake Booker. Darcy caught my eye, and a slow smile started on his lips.
"Saber! Well, I'm damned! The last time I saw Saber, he was in China!"
He took my hand, and we grinned at each other. He was much older than I, but we talked the same language. His hair was gray at the temples.
"They say you've had trouble with Cantwell.
And more to come if the sheriff doesn't get him. Park is mixed up in a shady deal with Jake Booker, the man across the table from me."
"Aye?" Booker smiled, but his eyes were deadly. "You're mistaken, Mr. Saber. It is true that Mr. Park asked me to represent him in some trouble he was having, but we've no other connection, none at all."
Jim Pender stalked in at that moment, but knowing that Mulvaney and Jolly were watching, I ignored him. "From the conversation I overheard in Silver Reef," I said to Booker, "I gathered you had obtained a buyer for some mining property he expected to have."
Fury flickered across his face. He had no idea how much I knew.
"It might interest you to know, Booker, that the fighting in this area is over. Pender is here, and we're having a peace meeting. Pender is making a deal with us, and with the Bar M. The fun's over."
"I ain't said nothing about no deal,"
Pender declared harshly.
"I come in because I figured you was ready to sell."
"I might buy, Pender, but I wouldn't sell. Furthermore, I'm with Chapin and Tharp in organizing this peace move. You can join or stay out, but if you don't join, you'll have to haul supplies from Silver Reef. This town will be closed to you. Each of us who's been in this fight is to put up a bond to keep the peace, effective at daybreak tomorrow. You can join or leave the country."
"After you killed my brother,"
Pender demanded,
"you asked for peace?"
"You started the trouble in the livery stable, figuring you were tough enough to hire me or run me out of the country. You weren't big enough or fast enough then, and you aren't now. Nobody doubts your nerve. You've too much for your own good, and so have the lot of us. But it gets us nothing but killing and more killing. You can make money on the CP, or you can try to buck the country. As for Raleigh, he laid for me, and he got what he asked for. You're a hard man, Pender, but you're no fool. And I've an idea you're square. Isn't it true Raleigh started out to get me?" Pender hesitated, rubbing his angular jaw.
"It is," he said finally. "But that don't make no..."
"It makes a lot of difference," I replied shortly. "Now look, Pender, you've lost more than you've cost us. You need money. You can't ship cattle. You sign up or you'll never ship any. Everybody here knows you've nerve enough to face me, but everybody knows you'd die. All you'd prove would be that you're crazy. You know I'm the faster man." He stared stubbornly at the table. Finally he said,
"I'll think it over. It'll take some time."
"It'll take you just 2 minutes," I said, laying it on the line. He stared hard at me, his knuckles whitening on the arms of the chair. Suddenly, reluctantly, he grinned. Sinking back into his chair, he shrugged.
You ride a man hard, Saber. All right. Peace it is.
Thanks, Pender. I thrust out my hand. He hesitated, then took it. Katie O'Hara filled his cup.
Look, he said, I've got to make a drive. The only way there's water is across your place.
What's wrong with that? Drive 'em across, and whatever water your herd needs is yours. Just so it doesn't take you more than a week to get 'em across. Pender smiled bleakly, but with humor.
Oh, you know it won't take more'n a day.
He subsided into his chair and started on the coffee. Jake Booker had been taking it all in, looking from one to the other of us with his sharp little eyes. Conoval opened the door and stepped in, looking pale and drawn, followed by Tom Fox.
Miss Olga could have signed for me, he said. She's the owner.
You sign, too, I insisted. We want to cover every eventuality. Booker was smiling. He rubbed his lips with his thin, dry fingers.
Oh, nonsense, he said briskly. Both the Bar M and the Two Bar belong to me. I've filed the papers. You've 24 hours to get off and stay off.
Booker, I said, has assumed we're fools. He believed if he could get a flimsy claim, he could get us into court and beat us. Well, this case will never go to court. Booker's eyes were beady.
Are you threatening me?
Sheriff Will Tharpe came into the room. His eyes rested on Jake, but he said nothing.
We aren't threatening, I said. On what does your claim to the Bar M stand?
Bill of sale, he replied promptly. The ranch was actually left to Jake Collins, the gunfighter. He was McLaren's brother-in-law. His will left all his property to a nephew, and I bought it, including the Bar M and all appurtenants thereto.
Carnival gave me a brief nod.
Sorry, Jake. You've lost your money. Jake Collins is not dead. The lawyer jumped as if slapped. Not dead? I saw his grave.
Booker, I smiled. Look down the table at Jake Collins. I pointed to Carnival. Booker broke into a fever of protest, but I was looking at Olga McLaren. She was staring at Carnival, and he was smiling.
Sure, honey, he said. That's why I knew so much about your mother. She was the only person in the world I ever really loved. Until I knew my niece.
Booker was worried now, really worried. In a matter of minutes, half his plan had come to nothing. He was shrewd enough to know we would not bluff, and that we had proof of what we said. As for the Two Bar, I added, don't worry about it. I have my witnesses that the state was given to me. Not that it will matter to you.
What's that? What do you mean?
Booker stared at me. Because you were too greedy. You'll never rob another man, Booker. For murder, you'll hang. He protested, but now he was cornered and frightened. You killed Rudd McLaren, I told him. And if that's not enough, you killed one of Slade's men from ambush. We can trail your horse to the scene of the crime. And if you think a Western jury won't take the word of an Indian tracker, you're wrong.
He killed McLaren?
Carnival asked incredulously. He got him out of the house on some trumped-up excuse, to show him the silver, or to show him something I was planning. It doesn't matter what excuse was used. He shot him, then loaded him on a horse and brought him to my place. He shot him again, hoping to draw me to the vicinity, as he wanted my tracks around the body.
Lass, Booker was recovering his assurance. Saber had trouble with McLaren, not I. We knew each other only by sight. The idea that I killed him is preposterous.
He got to his feet.
In any event, what have the ranches to do with the silver claim of which you speak?
Morgan Park found the claim while trailing a man he meant to murder, Arnold Darcy, who knew him as Cantwell. Arnold had stumbled upon the old mine. Park murdered him, only to find there was a catch in the deal. Darcy had already filed on the claim and had done assessment work on it. Legally, there was no way Park could gain possession, and no one legally could work the mine until Darcy's claim lapsed. Above all, Park wanted to avoid any public connection with the name of Darcy. He couldn't sell the claim because it wasn't his, but if he could get control of the Bar M and the 2 Bar, across which anyone working the claim must go, he could sell them at a fabulous price to an unscrupulous buyer. The new owner of the ranches could work the claim quietly, and by owning the ranches, he could deny access to the vicinity so it would never be discovered what claims were being worked. When Darcy's assessment work lapsed, the claims could be filed upon by the new owners.
Booker was to find a buyer? Asked Tharp.
Yes. Park wanted money, not a mine or a ranch. Booker, I believe, planned to be that buyer himself. He wanted possession of the Bar M, so he decided to murder Rudd McLaren.
You've got no case against me that would stand in court, Booker sneered. You can prove nothing. What witnesses do you have?
We had none, of course. Our evidence was a footprint. All the rest of what I'd said was guesswork. Tharp couldn't arrest a man on such slim grounds. We needed a confession. Tom Fox leaned over the table, his eyes cold. Some of us are satisfied. We don't need witnesses, and we don't need to hear no more. Some of us are almighty sure you killed Rudd McLaren. Got any arguments that will answer a 6-gun? Or a rope? Booker's face thinned down, and he crouched back against his chair.
You can't do that. The law. Tharp will protect me.
Sighting a way clear, I smiled. That might be, Booker. Confess, and Tharp will protect you. He'll save you for the law to handle. But if you leave here a free man, you'll be on your own.
And I'll come after you, Fox said.
Confess, Booker, I suggested, and you'll be safe.
Oh, turn him loose, Fox protested angrily. No need to have trouble. A trial and all, turn him loose. We all know he's a crook, and we all know he killed Rudd McLaren. Turn him loose.
Booker's eyes were haunted with fear. There was no acting in Tom Fox, and he knew it. The rest of us might bluff, but not Fox. The Bar M hand wanted to kill him, and given an opportunity, he would. Right then, I knew we were going to win. Jake Booker was a plotter and a conniver, not a courageous man. His mean little eyes darted from Fox to the sheriff. His mouth twitched and his face was wet with sweat. Tom Fox, his hand on his gun, moved relentlessly closer to Booker.
All right, then, he screamed. I did it. I killed McLaren. Now, Sheriff, save me from this man.
I relaxed at last as Tharp put the handcuffs on Booker. As they were leaving, I said, What about Park? What happened to him? Tharp cleared his throat.
Morgan Park is dead. He was killed last night on the wooden shoe.
We all looked at him, waiting.
That Apache of Pender's killed him, Tharp explained. Park ran for it after he busted out of jail. He killed his horse crossing the flats, and he ran into the engine with a fresh horse. He wanted to swap. The Apache wouldn't go for the deal, so Park tried to dry-gulch him. He should have knowed better. The engine killed him and lit out.
You're positive? Darcy demanded. Tharp nodded.
Yeah, he died hard, Park did.
The door opened and Jonathan Benares was standing there.
Been scouting around, he said. Bodie Miller's done took out. He hit the saddle about a half hour back and headed north out of town.
Bodie Miller gone. It was impossible, yet he had done it. Miller was gone. I got to my feet. Good, I said quietly. I was afraid there would be trouble. Pender got to his feet.
Don't you trust that Miller, he said grudgingly. He's a snake in the grass. You watch out.
So there it was. Pender was no longer an enemy. The fight had been ended, and I could